You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Please stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a trailer from Emmy Award-winning journalist Matt Johnson's podcast, True Crime Deadline. True Crime Deadline uncovers disturbing new details about murders, mysteries, and missing persons cases, and features exclusive interviews. Check it out. We'd also like to say how amazing we think the DNA Doe Project and forensic sketch artist Natalie Murray are for their work with the Williamson County Sheriff's Office in giving the Jane Doe known as Orange Socks back her name. Deborah Johnson of Abilene, Texas. Incredible, y'all. Now on to the show.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Maria de la Luz Serrato, known as Mary Lou to most, was born in Brownsville, Texas on September 10, 1952. Her parents, Maria and Miguel Serrato, were new to the United States at the time, having just immigrated from Mexico, and Mary Lou was their firstborn. Not long after Mary Lou came into the world, the blossoming family moved to Houston, where Miguel followed his father's footsteps in dentistry, becoming a dental technician, later using the techniques of his profession in the development of artificial hearts. Maria and Miguel would go on to have four more children. Mary Lou attended Holy Ghost Elementary School and graduated from Bel Air High School in Houston. She was a good kid, particularly known for being responsible, and enrolled at Stephen F. Austin State University in Nacogdoches. Mary Lou fell in love with a fellow student there, and the two were married, though this, her first marriage, only lasted 5 years. The divorce broke Mary Lou's heart. Mary didn't believe in divorce, her mother said. She was very romantic and idealistic. Mary was of the idea she would find a man like Daddy. Mary Lou became a real estate agent, and in 1980 began working with a man named Stephen George Jerry, an insurance agent, and the two fell quickly in love. They married in Lake Tahoe, Nevada in 1982, almost immediately upon the finalization of Stephen's divorce from his second wife. Stephen and Mary Lou's relationship was fulfilling and exciting, according to him. The couple often vacationed to places like Hawaii and abroad to Europe. By 1984, their 3,500 square foot home was built in an upscale, exclusive Sugar Land, Texas neighborhood called Teal Briar. Sugarland's name leaves nothing to the imagination as to its origin. In the 19th century, the floodplain of the Brazos River in the unincorporated area of Fort Bend County was an optimal place for the large sugar plantation it held. And by the 20th century, after the Imperial Sugar Company set up shop there, Sugarland was a company town whose residents consisted of virtually only folks who worked the plantation or the Imperial Sugar Company's refinery. Sugarland was eventually incorporated as an actual city in 1959, and the town's seal still features the Imperial Sugar Company's crown logo, whose headquarters is still located there. Sugarland is, at this point, essentially a suburb of the small town, soul-swallowing city just to its northeast, Houston, and it's one of the most affluent cities in the region. Mary Lou and Steve and Jerry's new home in Sugarland was the headquarters for their insurance company. The couple appeared to be doing well. By all accounts, they looked and lived the part of the typical affluent young couple in the area. On Friday, February 14th, 1986, Valentine's Day, Mary Lou was planning to host a lunchtime party at her and Steven's home. She always insisted that holidays, and even small events, be celebrated and enjoyed to the fullest. The get-together was to be a combined celebration of Valentine's and her mother's birthday, which also fell on the 14th. There's little doubt the party was set to go off without a hitch. Mary Lou was said to be a perfectionist. Fresh flowers were abound, as Mary Lou had a strong passion for them. Dishes of Valentine's candy were placed around strategically, and the home's fireplace was adorned with Valentine's cards. That morning, at about 8:15, Steve and Jerry phoned Maria Serrato, Mary Lou's mother, and reminded her about the party, asking her to go over and give Mary Lou a hand. Maria called her daughter upon hanging up with Steve and Jerry, but there was no answer. It was strange, she thought. Maria presumed Mary Lou would be up and running around, preparing for the lunch party. She was worried that there was no answer, but perhaps she was simply too busy to pick up the phone. Maria grabbed decorations for the party and headed to her daughter's house. She pulled through the gate to the end of the driveway, walked up to the back door, and knocked. But Mary Lou didn't answer, so she walked to the front of the home. Oddly and alarmingly, the front door, which Mary Lou always kept locked, was ajar. Maria entered and immediately noticed an overturned table in the hallway and heard the relentless barks of Mary Lou and Steven's dog. With no sign of Mary Lou downstairs, Maria hurried up the staircase to the second floor. She made her way to the back of the house, and in the master bathroom, found Mary Lou lying on the floor. She looked like she had fainted or something, and I started to kiss her in her face and touching her, and she looked like she was dead, Mary Lou's mother later told a reporter. And it got me completely. I was just like a wild person. I thought I was in a nightmare. I started screaming, "Mary, Mary, talk to me. What's wrong with you?" I laid back down to kiss her, and she was cold, cold, like she'd been dead forever, for years. When she didn't talk to me, I knew she was dead. She was cold, but I guess I was hoping maybe I was wrong. Authorities were alerted at 10:06 a.m., and Fort Bend County Sheriff's Office deputies soon arrived. It was a chaotic scene for the responding officers. Guests of Mary Lou's party had begun to arrive and were turned away. Mary Lou's mother was in shock. The floor of the bathroom was soaked in blood, and Mary Lou was unresponsive. It was obvious to the detectives right away that Mary Lou was deceased. But when paramedics arrived, they attempted to revive her, even injecting adrenaline directly into her heart. But Mary Lou could not be revived. She was taken to Fort Bend Community Hospital and pronounced dead there. The autopsy on Mary Lou's body revealed that she'd been shot 4 times, 3 times in her back and 1 in her side. The paramedics' attempts at resuscitation, though, rendered an estimation of the time of Mary Lou's death impossible. Trying to bring Mary Lou back, paramedics doing their job, had cast a dark cloud over that one potentially vital piece of information. On Monday, February 17, 1986, 33-year-old Mary Lou Cerato Jerry was laid to rest. Stephen Jerry was among those who eulogized his wife, saying, "Mary Lou was like a beautiful seagull. She loved the beach and the wind blowing in her hair. She loved to listen to the water on a pretty day and sit by the fireplace on a cold day doing her needlepoint. Mary Lou was one of the sweetest people you'd ever want to meet in your life. She was the kind of person who loved to watch President Ronnie and Nancy Reagan holding hands. She told me, 'That's the way we'll be when we're old. We'll always hold hands and love each other.'" Stephen Jerry granted an interview to a reporter that day, too, telling them, "I'm in so much pain. I feel my heart is broken. She had such a good heart. We had planned to start a family soon. The anger inside of me has not abated. There is nothing Mary Lou didn't do to make the house perfect. She wasn't just my wife. She was my friend, my lover," he went on, holding the giant Valentine's card he'd given his wife the eve before her murder. Stephen Jerry spoke of his wife's beauty, her love of flowers, their travels, and referenced the name he said he so often called her, Princess.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It seemed like in the beginning, everything was fine, Maria Cerato said about her daughter's marriage to Stephen Jerry after Mary Lou was slain in her home on Friday, February 14, 1986. Though Mary Lou and Stephen Jerry's life and marriage appeared from the outside to be idyllic, supportive, and loving, Maria began painting a picture in the press and in the public that was far removed from that description. She said for years her daughter and son-in-law's marriage was fraught with strife and constant fighting. Though the couple was doing well, Maria said, Stephen Jerry often spent beyond their means, which, just about as often, resulted in heated arguments over their finances. It was a torment of a marriage. The last 2.5 years of her life, it was nothing but crying about one thing and another. They were fighting over money, Mary Lou's mother said. From the moment they moved into the house, everything changed. There were too many arguments. She was not happy anymore. From the minute they bought the house, everything fell apart. Mary was unhappy. She cried all the time. She had a headache every day. When the arguments occurred, when Mary Lou would cry, she'd look to her mother for comfort. Things were so bad, Maria told a reporter, that she was surprised by Mary Lou's decision to even have a Valentine's Day party. 2 days after the death of his wife, Steve and Jerry put up a reward of $50,000 for information leading to the conviction of Mary Lou's killer, but the fund quickly fell apart. Fort Bend Sheriff's Office Lieutenant Marshall Wichard told the press, "We were never involved in the coordination of the reward, and I don't believe there was ever any money put in escrow." Steve and Jerry told reporters a slightly different story, saying, "There were no guidelines established as to who would deliver the money. It's been withdrawn." His attorney, who he referred reporters to should they have any other questions, echoed more the police's version than his client's, telling them he didn't have the money. Fort Bend County Sheriff's Office deputies told Steve and Jerry not to comment on the investigation. So beyond pointing out that the model home across the street from his and Mary Lou's house caused plenty of traffic, he wouldn't say whether he or others in the neighborhood had been having issues with anything else in the area, such as crime, and it's unclear why the press was relying on Steve and Jerry for such information as opposed to police. Detectives didn't think robbery was a motive, or if they did, they kept it quiet, and sexual assault was ruled out. The investigation from the beginning didn't uncover any evidence that corroborated a robbery gone wrong or home invasion anyway. There were no signs of forced entry, according to Fort Bend Sheriff's Department Sergeant Jerry Clements. There was a table knocked over in the hall, but really nothing else was messed up in the house. The house was not ransacked, he said. Sergeant Clements said that a struggle did occur. The signs were there, but nothing was taken. Mary Lou, in fact, still wore many pieces of jewelry when her body was discovered. Her jewelry box in the bedroom, though, was open. Maria Serrato explained. There was jewelry lying there, like she had been selecting jewelry or something that she was going to wear. Whoever killed Mary Lou didn't come in the house to steal anything. She believed the slaying of her daughter was a carefully planned and executed murder, and so did the rest of the Serrato family. "My sister knew who killed her. My sister would never have opened the door for someone she didn't know, and I don't believe for 1 minute my sister was taken by someone at the front door," Mary Lou's sister asserted at a press conference. Her brother told the Houston Chronicle, "I think my sister was murdered early in the morning. It was planned, staged, and then that person disappeared to do his alibis." "We feel like we've been robbed," Miguel said of the loss of his daughter. "Robbed of our happy times together in the future," his wife took over his thought. "This family will never be the same. Our life is completely changed." Refuting what investigators and the Serratos said about missing items, however, was Steve and Jerry. "Well, there were many things taken. The gross value was about $25,000 to $30,000, maybe $40,000 worth of jewelry," he said. Mary Lou's mother and father both dismissed his claims. So many expensive items were out in the open in Mary Lou and Steve and Jerry's home, they said, and they were aware of nothing missing. Investigators also maintained their assertion that there was absolutely no evidence that anything of value was missing at all. Fort Bend Sheriff's Department Lieutenant Wichard said from the get-go that the investigation into Mary Lou's murder would most likely take time, adding that, quote, "There are suspects, but I'm not at liberty to go into any detail." A detail that emerged upon the completion of ballistics testing definitely got the attention and focus of police. The fact that there were two different calibers of bullets used to kill Mary Lou Jerry, both 22 caliber and 25 caliber, which cannot be fired from the same gun. The spouse of a victim is often the first person that investigators scrutinize, and the case of the homicide of Mary Lou Gerry was no different in that regard. Fort Bend Sheriff's Office investigators set their sights on Stephen Gerry immediately. First, police were interested in inspecting the multiple handguns he owned, none of which were found in the house. When the firearms registered to Stephen Gerry were finally produced, and it is unclear where exactly they were, ballistic testing could not match any of them to the bullets fired into Mary Lou's back and side. Investigators still wondered, however, if Stephen Gerry's change in routine was a clue. On a normal day, he worked in his home office in the mornings, but on the day of Mary Lou's murder, his routine was in substantial contrast to the norm. Stephen Gerry told police that Mary Lou was still in bed at around 6:30 when he left that morning to run errands. He said, quote, "I woke up at about 5 that morning. I went upstairs and worked on the computer. I had an extremely busy day. There were some things that I had to finish up. Mary Lou was still in bed. I told her that I would call her at 7. I know that the security system was on when I left the house at about 6:25, 6:30. I went down to 7-Eleven and got another cup of coffee. I left there and went to the post office, picked up our mail for the day. From there, I went to the donut shop, picked up donuts. Then I went to Precision Glass, Don Richardson's company, and talked with them for a moment. I started to leave, realized that I had forgotten to call Mary Lou. I went back in at the reception desk and called her at almost 7:30. She was up. She said she was busy, 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 so I told her goodbye." End quote. It remains unclear, too, why Stephen Gerry alerted his mother-in-law to help Mary Lou with the lunchtime party. Why didn't Mary Lou call her mother herself? Private investigator Bill Elliott, a former Houston police lieutenant, was hired by Mary Lou's mother and father to take a closer look at Stephen Gerry's alibi. Witnesses told the private eye that Stephen usually didn't leave his and Mary Lou's home until around 9 a.m., sometimes as late as 10 a.m. Elliott also discovered that the first stop Stephen Gerry claimed to make was only 2 blocks from their home. It should have taken him only a few minutes to arrive there, but he didn't arrive until 7 a.m., it's reported, 30 minutes after he claimed to have left the home. We interviewed the people at the convenience store where he went first, and it was their recollection and very positive recollection that Stephen did not get there until 3 minutes until 7 o'clock, Elliott said. A variation in the alibi that would have given him time to do things as far as getting rid of evidence and that kind of thing. The curious thing is that Mr. Gerry had not only gone to these places that morning, but the following day, he went back and reminded these people that he had been there the day before, which is something that I found unusual, Elliott added. He even asked for receipts, according to witnesses. It appeared to the private investigator that Stephen was adamant about supporting his alibi with these witnesses, an unusual thing to do the day after your spouse is murdered, to say the least. Bill Elliott's findings raised some eyebrows, not only Mary Lou's parents, but also in law enforcement. Fort Bend Sheriff's Department Lieutenant Wichard told reporters, "Suspects have been established and cleared. But there was still one who hadn't been eliminated," he also told them. It wasn't a particularly difficult feat of the mind to guess who they meant. And then came the lawsuit. Two years before Mary Lou Cerato Gerry was murdered in her own home, her husband, Stephen Gerry, bought her and himself life insurance policies each with a payout of $435,000, which would be, to put it in perspective, over $1 million in 2019 money for each policy. That policy and other assets in mind, her parents claimed, Mary Lou was worth a total of $800,000 altogether, or $1.8 million altogether in 2019. Mr. Jerry was a big spender, liked to spend a lot of money, and liked to live the high life at a higher level than his income was capable of supporting, private investigator Bill Elliott said. It was that assertion, along with what Mary Lou's parents perceived was Stephen Jerry's decision to file to collect on the insurance policy a little too soon, that caused Maria and Miguel Serrato to file a restraining order, freezing the funds so that Stephen couldn't collect. The Serratos filed a lawsuit against Stephen Jerry based on the grounds that he intentionally and wrongfully caused the death of their daughter, Mary Lou Jerry, specifying that he should not benefit from the insurance money nor her assets because of his responsibility for her death. It's really caused a dogged persistence to set in with those officers charged with investigating it, Lieutenant Wichard commented, meaning that while he had no comment on the civil case against Stephen Jerry, he and his fellow detectives were keeping their ears peeled as to the outcome. Mary Lou's parents believed that if Stephen Jerry collected on the insurance policies, he'd flee. Stephen maintained his claims of innocence, of course, and said that he was appalled at Miguel and Maria's allegations against him. He and Mary Lou were incredibly happy with their lives together and very much in love, he claimed. All parties involved, Mary Lou's parents and Stephen Jerry, agreed that no attempts at collecting the insurance money would be made until after the closure of a civil trial, which was set to take place in either late October or early November of 1986. Regardless of any agreement or decision the trial might bring, investigators for the insurance company couldn't determine whether Stephen Jerry's alibi was truthful. He was claiming $25,000 to $40,000 of goods were stolen from his home with Mary Lou, while the Serratos claimed that nothing was taken at all. Insurance investigators uncovered other alarming information, too, in their inquiry into Mary Lou's death. Stephen Jerry, it turned out, had several cash judgments against him. He owed over $70,000 to real estate companies and banks, and over $30,000 to American Express. Stephen admitted to having just signed a lease purchase on a $32,000 Mercedes, but justified it by claiming he had to. He was self-employed and needed the car to impress his clients. People do business with successful people, Stephen Jerry said. I have a good, strong clientele who are very prosperous. Plus, he needed the tax write-off, he added. I'd rather have my wife back, Stephen said of the insurance money. He could afford to live without it anyway. He was doing fine, he said. However, Stephen Jerry was delinquent on the house payment by over $2,100, the home that he and Mary Lou purchased 3 years prior to her death for $245,000, a home in which the value exceeds $500,000 in 2019's market, and a home that was under Mary Lou's name, along with their car. He still doesn't know why he's a defendant in this lawsuit, Stephen Jerry's attorney said in his defense. I just don't see that there's any evidence against him other than what you've known all along, that there were debts and that there's insurance. But that's not the determination that the Serratos' private investigator, Bill Elliott, came to. Elliott thought the entire plot was well orchestrated to appear as a robbery gone wrong, with only one little problem. It was one of the neatest robberies you've ever seen, he said. Elliot thought for sure it was only a matter of time before Steve and Jerry was arrested and charged with Mary Lou's murder. This thing was planned, Elliot told a reporter. It wasn't a happenstance situation, a heat of passion type murder. I feel like Mary Lou learned something or saw something she shouldn't have seen, and that's what led to her death. I don't necessarily believe the morning of her death is when she saw what she saw, Elliot went on. When the court proceedings finally began, they didn't last long. The Serratos and Steve and Jerry reached a settlement, but because the judge ordered the court documents sealed and put a gag order in place, it isn't known exactly what the outcome was and which side made the request for the settlement. Steve and Jerry later claimed that he was approached by the Serratos with the offer. He told the television program Unsolved Mysteries in 1988, quote, I was adamant that when my attorney presented this to me, that it would not be as an admission of guilt, and that rather the Serratos would realize that I was not involved, or why would they make the offer? If it had been my daughter and I thought that person was involved, there is no way I would ever take the settlement. But they did. The judge adjudicating the case commented, as a result of the settlement, there will be a reward offered for the indictment and conviction of the person responsible for Mary Lou Jerry's death. Not long after, an $80,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the person or persons responsible for the death of Mary Lou Serrato Jerry was offered. Some claiming that it was the largest reward of its kind ever offered, even toppling the 1985 $71,000 reward offered for information in the assassination of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme. The $80,000 was set to come from funds allocated for it in the settlement. Jerry's attorneys couldn't be present at the fund proceedings, though, so Maria and Miguel Serrato put their own $80,000 in, which was to be reimbursed upon the finalization of the insurance settlement. The money was deposited at Texas Commerce Bank with Steve and Jerry's lawyers as trustees. The reward only lasted a year, expiring at the end of 1987, and no information was obtained. Fort Bend Sheriff's Office Sergeant Jerry Clements said that not all the possible suspects have been cleared and that the case was still active. Steve and Jerry, who was still one of those persons of interest, told Unsolved Mysteries in 1988, No, I did not kill my wife. Mary Lou was the perfect woman for me. We had a wonderful life together, exciting. We traveled. We built one hell of a business and were a fantastic complement to each other. Not long after she was buried, Mary Lou Jerry's headstone was vandalized many times, often smeared with mud, and it was eventually stolen. Maria and Miguel Serrato replaced the monument, which memorializes her as Mary Lou Serrato instead of Jerry. The headstone, being vandalized and then stolen, was a cold and cruel addition to the grief and anguish that Mary Lou's family already felt. The Serratos were never the same after their daughter's death, of course. Miguel, Mary Lou's father, said it affected his sleep, his work, every aspect of his life. We lay down in bed and wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, staring at the ceiling, wondering what's wrong. He said in late 1986, We cannot work. I haven't done any business in 8 months since she died, he added. Every Valentine's Day rolls by, and it's my mother's birthday, and we can't celebrate it, Mary Lou's brother, Luis, told a reporter from the Houston Chronicle. Maria Serrato has never given up, though. She has expressed her frustration with going on with her life, not knowing who killed a daughter who was so precious to her, and the fact that, she thinks, it was planned and executed successfully. 32 years after Mary Lou's murder, in 2018, Fort Bend County Sheriff Troy Nels was personally touched by Mary Lou's case when Maria Serrato visited his office, bringing him a photograph of her daughter. "That image has haunted me since then," Sheriff Nels told a reporter. The department was going through their cold case files, picking out evidence and information that can be subjected to modern testing, such as DNA testing, and sending it to the DPS crime lab to be re-examined. Mary Lou's case is challenging for the Fort Bend Sheriff's Office, particularly since they had as many as 16 investigators working the case at a time when it was fresh, and because of the significant and unprecedented reward of $80,000 drew no information. Associate Dean at Sam Houston State University's College of Criminal Justice said in a 2018 Houston Chronicle article that while cold cases are certainly worth looking back into, the solvability rate is low and continues to decline the longer the case file sits there and collects dust. Evidence in Mary Lou's case has eluded the grasp of investigators for 33 years. Several suspects, or persons of interest, rather, remain on the list, but not necessarily because they look good for Mary Lou's murder, but because they simply cannot be ruled out. "It's a total mystery, a real whodunit," one homicide detective commented to a Houston Chronicle reporter. But is it? The department has never called Mary Lou's husband, Stephen Jerry, a suspect, but he remains at the top of their persons of interest list. If he didn't do it himself, he may know or have had something to do with it, Fort Bend County Sheriff Troy Nels said. But the frustration the department feels is nothing compared to Mary Lou's family. It's hard knowing the person who's responsible for this is living their life, enjoying things, and not giving a second thought to what they did to our family, Mary Lou's sister, Diana, said. "It's been 32 years and there's not been a peep," Maria Serrato said. "Nothing. It gets aggravating." She was happy that the department had dusted off Maria's long cold case and cautiously optimistic that new technology will provide new leads. A renewed reward of $20,000 has been offered for information on Mary Lou Serrato Jerry's murder. It's not going to bring Mary Lou back, but it would be nice to see some kind of justice, Mary Lou's mother said. If you have any information about the murder of Mary Lou Serrato Jerry, please contact Fort Bend County Crime Stoppers at 281-342-TIPS or 281-342-8477. Callers can remain anonymous. Don't forget to stick around to the end for a trailer from True Crime Deadline. The Houston Chronicle, Houston's ABC 13, the Fort Bend Herald, and the television show Unsolved Mysteries were used as sources for this episode. If you'd like to support Gone Cold Podcast, Texas True Crime, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/Gone Cold Podcast. There are several varying donation levels to choose from, with perks to go along with each, including ad-free listening at all levels. Donations help us cover the costs of research and production, and we can't thank y'all enough for your support. Thanks for listening, y'all.
From the Hollywood Hills to your earholes, this is True Crime Deadline.
I'm Matt Johnson, boots on the ground reporter and host of True Crime Deadline, the podcast that gives you a unique reporter's point of view from the yellow crime scene tape to the gavel in the courtroom. We paint a picture on True Crime Deadline with murder, mystery, and missing persons cases. My contacts grant you access to those case files with disturbing new details and exclusive interviews. Details might have you thinking, no, that didn't happen. They didn't do that, did they? And then there's the Oprah-inspired Where Are They Now? Binge these 30-minute Crime Bite episodes where you get your podcasts. Buckle up, investigators. You're on Deadline.
For more information about the podcast, visit truecrimedeadline.com. Until next time.